Lake Effect continues now on Milwaukee Public Radio. I'm Bonnie North.
And I'm Mitch Tyke. A 100-year flood, the collapse of the housing bubble, the Ebola outbreak. To hear many talk about these phenomena, they were stunning events that came as a shock to the places they hit and the world at large.
But writer and former Milwaukeean Michelle Wooker says that there are far fewer complete surprises than we might think, and that in many cases, catastrophe is something that can be foreseen and acted upon before it happens.
Wooker's latest book is designed to be a wake-up call of sorts. It's called The Gray Rhino, How to Recognize and Act on the Obvious Dangers We Ignore. And she's with us in the studio to explain. Welcome back to the show. It has been a long time.
It's really great to be back.
Let's start with a central metaphor that you're working from. Explain what you're getting at with the image of the gray rhino versus anything else.
So gray rhino is something that's really big. It's scary. It's got a horn. It's coming right at you. And you've got a choice to freeze or to do something. I saw the images that we use that tend to be animals, actually. It was kind of funny. But the elephant in the room just stands there. It's very static. And everybody takes it as a given that nobody's going to say anything or do anything. You've got the ostrich with its head in the sand. You've got the see no evil, hear no evil, speak no evil monkeys. There's a lot of recognition of how hard it is for us to deal with big things that we know we have to deal with. And the gray rhino, I wanted to add to this menagerie because I felt we needed something active that didn't take for granted that we do nothing, that recognizes how hard it is to deal with the obvious things that are right in front of us, despite their being so big and sometimes actually because they're so big. And it's gray partly because of a joke a friend made, but there was a best-selling book about 10 years ago called The Black Swan. And the premise was that people could only see white swans and they couldn't picture a black swan. And the book said you should make more room to think about and consider the possibility of things that are highly improbable, highly unpredictable, things that you can't imagine. And so when I told my friend I was thinking about a rhino, he made a black swan joke. He said, oh, a black rhino. And I didn't know anything about rhinos. I think I maybe saw one at the zoo when I was a little kid. So I said, but wait a minute, there is such a thing as a black rhino. And there is such a thing as a white rhino. Let me go to Wikipedia and see. And then I realized, actually, that black rhinos are not black. And white rhinos are not white. It's, wide comes from the lip, the wide lip. And they're all gray. It's something that's so obvious that we don't get because we come up with these little stories that send us off in strange directions. So that's where the gray rhino came from.
Well, when did the epiphany happen, though, that there was this phenomenon of things out there that really the gray rhino was the perfect metaphor for that we really weren't dealing with?
Well, it came up in 2012, and it goes back much further to my former life as a financial journalist when I was writing about Latin American and Eastern European bonds, really geeky stuff. but I was writing a lot about Argentina, a country that I absolutely love. And about 9 months before its catastrophic collapse in 2001, there was a proposal that was going around Wall Street for a voluntary restructuring, writing off 30% of the debt because everyone saw the numbers. They saw the writing on the wall. I said, this is not going to last. And Argentina had been the star of the emerging markets, didn't want to lose face. And the banks had been doing very expensive restructurings and getting lots of underwriting fees. So they didn't want to do things. So it didn't happen. And of course, 9 months later, Argentina collapsed. Eventually, banks ended up losing about 70%. So it seemed to be a classic stitch in time saves nine kind of story. And in 2012, we had just seen a very different outcome in Greece. I'd written a paper in 2011 for the New America Foundation about Greece facing a very similar dynamic, you know, debt going up, GDP going down. And in that case, there were much bigger potential consequences for the euro and the
whole
European Union and the world and the global economy. It was a very bad time. So I wrote about that in spring of 2011 and saying, look, Argentina had this big mistake. You can learn from it. And the stakes are very high. And I was surprised at the difference in the reaction. In Argentina, when I wrote about that write-down proposal, the phone was just ringing off the hook. Bankers were calling and saying, we think this is what needs to happen, but we can't say so or we're going to be fired. This time, people actually did talk about it. And earlier in the spring of 2012, down to the wire, just as Greece might have defaulted, the private sector creditors sat down and they came to an agreement and disaster was averted temporarily. It wasn't perfect, but it was enough to raise this question of what makes the difference between decision makers who see something really big and scary coming at them, the ones who do something, and the ones who don't.
And at the same time, you mentioned the idea of the black swan, and there are a lot of situations out there that people have described as perhaps black swans, but really are gray rhinos.
Absolutely. Well, it was funny when I was researching the book, I wanted to know the accurate zoological term for a herd of gray rhinos and discovered that it was a crash. And how perfect is that? Because 2008 was really not a black swan, in my view. It was a crash of gray rhinos. The thing that people didn't see was exactly how extensive it was going to be, but there were lots of individual gray rhinos that were out there that were very, very obvious. There was a liquidity bubble. There was market speculation, the whole subprime market crisis, the credit default swaps. And you had very respected individuals and organizations coming out and saying, this is a disaster. Christine Lagarde, who at the time was head of the French finance ministry, came out and said, we are facing a financial tsunami. So anyone who says we didn't see it coming is in delusion. You go back and you look at the journalists who were writing about it, do a nexus search for mentions of financial crisis, and it was very obvious that it was coming.
You know, I will say that as I started reading this, the gray rhinos really started to feel like they were all over the place, you know, from that little noise the car is making to much bigger issues in the world. So when you sat down and started considering these things, how do you evaluate and distinguish a sort of run-of-the-mill cause for concern with something that's really charging at us and has the potential to be a gray rhino?
Yeah, that's a central question, and it's part of how I looked at the book. These little individual things like, you know, your car, you're needing to change the oil, or little things, little human things like, you know, you should stop eating those cheeseburgers. But a lot of people, including a certain former president, didn't make the changes they needed to until after two heart procedures. And those are so human, and it affects every single one of us. And what happens is, you multiply one person's natural tendency times the number of people in an organization, in a city, in a country, and on the planet, and that's where you get this immense pressure behind the bigger problems. And it's really relevant on every level. So, you know, at the 30,000-foot level, you've got things like climate change, you've got things like economic crisis for companies, things like technology disruptions. Not everybody agrees that something is a problem, and that's really where the question starts. You know, how do you get out of denial? How do you recognize something that's right in front of you? And when you're prioritizing it, there are all sorts of criteria you can look at. You know, how fast is it coming at you? Is this something that happens regularly that you should think about having regular measures in place for, like, say, the flu virus, which, you know, of course, we still don't always get our flu vaccines the way we should. But the big thing for me is, how connected is this gray rhino to other gray rhinos? And how many other gray rhinos can it affect if you don't solve it? So that interconnectedness and that impact on other things, of course, the potential size of it, the ability to fix it or not. You've got something like Syria where it's very hard to get agreement on how to fix it. You've got a Gordian knot. You've got things like climate change where the solution is pretty easy. Reduce greenhouse gas emissions. Now, there are a lot more details in that. But there's a real difference between the things that you really don't know how to solve and the things that there are some pretty clear solutions for, also obstacles. But I would say when you know what to do, that's a pretty good thing to prioritize.
Right. And you do write that there's just a lot in the current political and economic framework that makes it easy or even profitable in the short run to ignore these threats or even deny them.
Very much so. For certainly, you know, political terms, you know, it's very much in your interest to kick something down the road to the next guy for it to blow up because people don't really get the credit that they should for fixing things. And that's one of the ways I'm hoping that the gray rhino concept can help for people to be able to say, hey, here's a gray rhino. Did this leader deal with it or not? So that they can be held to account more for not dealing with something that they should. There are also financial structures. I don't think we do nearly as good a job as we could, either in companies or in cities, countries, governing bodies, of accounting for the costs that we can avoid by doing the right thing. You always hear, well, we can't afford to fix that bridge because we've got all these other immediate problems. But then, of course, the bridge collapses. I went out to Minnesota to see the aftermath of that and the very touching memorial. And you get costs that are even higher because you didn't deal with it in the first place. So your problem gets worse and worse and worse down the road. So we really need to rethink our accounting and our financing structures, and also even some of these emergency funds. You know, you can tap into a federal pool of money if you've got an emergency, but what if we instead were to take that pool and allocate more of it towards preventive measures? We'd be a lot better off financially in the long run.
How good are we at honestly evaluating ourselves as far as evaluating these threats? Because there are a lot of examples out there where entities, governments, companies say they took action, but you're right that it didn't really amount to the action that was needed.
Very much so. We're very likely to come up with things that look like we're dealing with a problem. Like taking off the shoes in the airport is one of my favorites. You know, Forbes has estimated tens of billions of dollars a year in lost time. And we'll never know, of course, how many shoe bomb attacks we might have prevented. But I think that if you were to really drill down and do a cost-benefit analysis, I think that there are other things that would be far more effective in preventing terrorism than everybody taking off their shoes. But it makes people feel like they're doing something.
To read the advanced reviews of this book, it's gotten in the hands of some pretty big names in high positions. What about the rest of us, though? What does a regular old reader in Milwaukee do with this knowledge that causes it to go from just my recognizing that I should probably get the oil change to something happening as far as climate change goes or preventing the next 2008?
Well, there are a couple things. One is asking yourself, if you know what your gray rhinos are, I try to recommend that people look at a personal gray rhino, a work gray rhino, and something on the planet. A lot of people don't do things to try to solve some of the big 30,000-foot problems because they don't feel like they've got the power to do anything. And one of the messages in the book is that people do have a lot more power than they think. There's an incredibly inspiring person in the book, Mina Gulli, an Australian, who just did this amazing set of marathons to raise attention of water scarcity. She did 40 marathons in 7 deserts on 7 continents in 7 weeks. I mean, completely crazy. Her message was really, this is what one person can do. And she tied that with a pledge of if you stop eating chocolate. I stopped eating chocolate for a month, which was really hard. but the amount of water that chocolate uses, or switching from coffee to tea, or you know, you're looking at the amount of water that your clothes use, being conscious of that. Once you add all those together, when people put their pledges together, you start seeing hundreds of millions of liters of water being saved. And it's important for people to realize that no action is too small.
So why you? Why do you think you are taking this on as your responsibility?
Well, that's a great question. I think certainly the experience being a financial journalist and seeing the differences was important to me. But I've been in policy for a long time. I started out as a journalist, actually, you know, at the Milwaukee Sentinel here early in my career. And I've actually been struck coming back to Milwaukee about how many things have changed for the better, but how many things are also very much the same. And had a great discussion last night, actually, with the Greater Milwaukee Committee and University Club about some of Milwaukee's gray rhinos, focusing this discussion on workforce strategies as a way to try to solve some of the problems that Milwaukee has and turn them into opportunities. But I spent 8 years in think tank management, and felt very strongly that policy for too long has been kept as something in this ivory tower, very far away. People think of great gray statesmen meeting on some secret island somewhere. And people don't realize how much power they have and how much really policy discussions need to be brought out into the open, how many people need to feel that they've got a chance to do something. And I think the sense of powerlessness that people have on all sorts of levels has been very obvious in this election season. This theme of government's not doing what it should, I don't feel like I have a voice, is everywhere across the whole political spectrum. And that sense of powerlessness, I think, combined with the paralysis we're seeing in government, the increasingly uncivil tone of discussions, the polarization, those on one level could be seen as meta rhinos because they affect our ability to address budget issues, healthcare issues, foreign policy issues, economic issues, just about everything. But they're very much a gray rhino in and of themselves. I've been very concerned and seen how worried many other people are about just how nasty the political tone has become. And that could lead us in a direction that really destroys who we are as a country and what makes us great.
Does the gray rhino give a language to the issues that people want their candidates to address?
I would certainly hope so. I see the gray rhino as something that I've, you know, come up with, but I very much want to see people make it their own, because everybody's going to have different gray rhinos. Everybody's going to have different ideas of what the main gray rhinos are. And that discussion about, you know, what's the problem and how do we get there is important for everybody, not just on policy issues, but also on the personal level. I met someone recently and was talking about the book, and she says, oh, wow, the end of my marriage was a gray rhino. All my friends were telling me and I didn't want to see it. And I understand now. I wish I'd read this book before.
Well, let's hope that isn't the case for everyone reading this book, but in terms of their marriage ending. But Michelle Wooker, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Michelle Wooker's latest book is called The Gray Rhino, How to Recognize and Act on the Obvious Dangers We Ignore. Wooker started her career as a reporter for the Milwaukee Sentinel and has held positions with the World Policy Institute and the Chicago Council on Global Affairs. She now lives in Chicago.